Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. Thank you. Thank you for joining us this week. When you have a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2025 Best Buy picks. Check out our blog where the fun stuff lives. And remember that you can stream the podcast right there on our homepage, which is handy, but you should just subscribe. All right, in studio is Jill Simonello. She is managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American Car of the Year juror, and I guess I'll go with prolific again because I didn't come up with a better word. Prolific freelancer.
Okay.
I need another word.
Syndicated?
Yeah, okay. But that doesn't work for all of it. It's just kind of a narrow chunk of freelancing.
Yeah, I guess so.
So I don't know if that works. How you doing?
Good. I am good.
I have forgotten something 2 weeks in a row.
Okay.
So I want to get to it now.
Okay.
Our good friend Sam Fiorani was recently a guest on Green Sense Radio, the Green Sense Show, I'm sorry, hosted by our good friend Robert Colangelo.
Okay.
So that's available now. They're talking about the Chinese auto industry and primarily BYD.
Okay.
So I finally got around to listening to it. It's excellent.
Okay.
Because if Sam's talking about it, it's excellent.
Yes.
And Robert's a great interviewer. So people want to check that out. It's about half an hour, worth your time.
Okay.
And just to get a sense of the Chinese auto industry.
Yes.
Which we've talked about it. We've dabbled in it.
Yes.
But it's a big, messy business.
It is. And in a couple of weeks, we actually have somebody on who visited China for a couple of weeks and went to one of the major auto shows and spent some time, I think, driving and checking out the electric car industry there. So
yeah, it's interesting. Also interesting, a story in Automotive News. I heard about the story. I haven't read it myself yet, so this is secondhand. But we've been hearing about Chinese cars, Chinese EVs breaking into the European market. I think all the fear there may have been just a little bit premature. It turns out that at least in Germany, according to Automotive News, the Germans don't really want the Chinese cars. They're not buying them. They have a very small market share, and it's not growing.
Okay.
So that's just Germany. That's not all of Western Europe. It's not the EU. But it's a thing people should know about. I'm just going to finish this mea culpa from last week. When we talked about the 3.3 versus 3.5 liter engine in the GV70, I looked up the G70, not the GV70.
Got it.
So my bad.
Okay, good. Then I don't feel so bad.
Yeah.
I was right. I was really right.
I would prefer not to have to apologize for anything else in the near future. Our guest Joel Fetter was right.
Okay.
That doesn't surprise me, but it was a good call. We talked about the Subaru Trail Seeker.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to supplement the Subaru Solterra in the Subaru EV lineup.
Uh-huh.
And it was his thought that the Trailseeker, which is slightly larger, uses a slightly different body, would be a little weird because it's built by Toyota, basically, for Subaru. So why wouldn't Toyota have something like that for themselves?
I feel like I brought that up.
Well, then you were both right.
I'm like, I think that would be me being right again.
The 2026... BZ Woodland,
yes,
will be that vehicle.
Yes.
Also, good news about the BZ, which we call the BZ4X in 2025.
Well, actually, they changed the name.
For 2025?
I don't know if it's for 2025 or 2026.
For 2026.
Okay. I know they changed the name.
It's just BZ, although I think it is Big B, Little Z, which is irritating. But the vehicle gets...
Little B, Big Z, I think.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's that.
It's still irritating regardless.
Yeah. But here's the good news for Toyota. The best range right now of the BZ is about 252 miles. It's going to be 314 miles.
Yeah.
So big bump in mileage, range, that's going to make it more competitive. And the CHR name, which was a likable subcompact that Toyota was selling here in the U.S., is coming back as an EV.
Yes.
It will be based on that same architecture, should cost less.
Yes.
So Toyota, which had been dragging its feet on EVs, is now going to have three EVs for sale in the U.S. next year.
I know. And you know, they launched the new refreshed BZ and the CHR Plus, which I think they're just added a plus in Europe for no reason. But about a month or so ago, and at that time, they also implied that they would be bringing an electric pickup truck to market as well.
I haven't heard about that yet, and I don't think that's close, because we're talking 2026 here without it.
It could be 2027. They showed the silhouette in a presentation. I actually wrote a story on it that I can send you. But
yes.
It's coming, maybe not for 2026, or if it's 2026, it'll be at the end of the year. But
okay.
Yeah.
I had written a story, and I can't even remember what the name was at the time, about a subcompact Toyota pickup truck that I haven't heard much about since.
Well,
but it was not an EV.
No, I know they were talking about building a pickup truck based on the Corolla Cross architecture.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that ever came to fruition.
So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There might be some room in that market if someone can underprice the now very expensive Ford Maverick.
Yeah, seriously.
Although the Ford Maverick, popular. The Hyundai...
Santa Cruz.
Thank you. Santa Cruz, not setting the world on fire sales-wise.
No.
Hyundai doesn't have a lot of flops, and this isn't a flop, but it's also not a major success.
Yeah.
It is priced higher, even still, than the Maverick, and it's not convincingly a pickup. It really does look like a crossover with a bed. Actually, I think it looks great.
Yeah.
It's a nice vehicle. A little expensive, maybe not taken seriously as a truck. I don't know, but maybe it doesn't have that cute thing going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest win for the Maverick is the fact that it looks like a baby 150. Like, it looks like a truck, even though it has unibody construction. It's got, you know, truck vibes.
If I had to apply the word adorbs to one of those trucks,
right?
It would not be the Santa Cruz.
Okay.
I think it's the Ford.
You think that the Ford Maverick is adorable?
It's cuter.
Okay.
I said if I had to apply it, I don't think it's actually cute, but I think people do.
Okay.
Also, here's the thing. When the Maverick came out, right at the beginning of COVID,
mm-hmm.
women in my office went crazy for it.
Hmm.
They all wanted it, and one bought one.
Okay.
Like, they ran out. And even during COVID, she found one. She tracked one down. They were very expensive relative to the sticker price because they were rare and dealers knew it.
Well, and I'm starting to actually see a lot of Mavericks in Chicago now for business trucks.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what's weird? Americans don't ever stick to buying small commercial trucks, right? Nissan tried with the NV200. Mercedes tried with the Metris. Chevy sold a version of the NV200. What was it called? The City Express. And then Stellantis was selling the, I forgot what it was called.
The ProMaster?
ProMaster City.
Yeah.
Yeah. And none of those are around anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't know why, but we don't latch on to small commercial vehicles. It's weird. People keep trying. And it seems for a long time, Ford was selling a lot of the Transit Connects.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they had the most commercial success
mm-hmm.
with a small van, but that didn't sell well either, ultimately. They discontinued that.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things they've done with Transit is they've now turned it into, so not Transit Connect, but Transit.
The
they've turned
van.
It into an overlanding vehicle that can be outfitted to camp.
They sell it like that as a model in Europe. And I think that what do they call those? Caravans. I think
yeah.
they call them caravans over there. Very popular in the UK.
Yeah. But I think here they call it like the Transit Trail.
And then that's not a model, though. Is that a package?
I think it is a package. I remember...
have you seen one? I have not.
They did like a little media program up in Detroit, and I went up for the day
oh, okay.
and checked it out. So I think I have a video on that I can share.
So there you go. Interesting news here. I got two things left because we still have to talk about the Expedition and the Navigator,
mm-hmm.
Which I think I just said that for the first time.
You did.
But we talked about it off air.
Yes,
so that's why it sounds like a continuation of a previous conversation, though it's not really.
No.
Tesla Cybertruck news. Yes, it's funnier than you think. Did you see this story?
I don't know. At this point, I just kind of tune it all out.
This one's important because it might be the nail in the coffin, and we'll see if other people start reporting on this. Yesterday,
mm-hmm.
Jalopnik reported this story. Apparently, Cybertrucks are ripping through tires at an incredible pace.
Okay, that doesn't surprise me.
Every 7,000 or 8,000 miles, it seems, per Jalopnik, and I found some message boards that substantiate this story.
Mm-hmm.
People need to replace the tires every 7,000 or 8,000 miles. The tires are unique to that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
$400 or $500 a pop.
Oof.
So yeah, you don't have to have $100 oil change every 8,000 miles, but you do need to spend $2,000 on.
Jeez, Louise. Yeah.
So we'll see if that's for everything or if that's just some people who have been beating on the trucks. I don't know. But it's bad news.
Yeah.
Also, there are tires that are cheaper. They're off-brand, strange Chinese tires, and you probably don't want to put those on your 8,000-pound electric vehicle. But, you know, if they're that expensive, maybe you do.
Well, you know, I recently had the opportunity to test the Pirelli XTM tires, the Scorpion XTM tires, mm-hmm. which they make some off-road tires. They are off-road tires, but they make them for Rivian, like R1T and R1S. And I wonder if those would fit the Cybertruck.
Well, there was a specific size, and that size is only available from Goodyear, who makes the OEMs. And then mm-hmm. some other people snuck in, some Chinese companies snuck in.
Interesting.
They're selling them. But other makers will come in with them.
Yeah.
There are enough of these vehicles now on the road, 50, 60,000 of them, that it makes sense to make a tire in that size.
Right.
Okay, I've got a weird complaint.
Okay.
And it's a weird one, and I don't know if you've noticed this. I recently drove the BMW M235 Grand Coupe.
Okay.
BMW's smallest sedan, though it's called a coupe. A coupe. Yeah. So the M235 is the sporty version.
Okay.
There's also there's a 228 and an M235. Love the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
It's purple. It's called Thunder Knight. That's the color. Fabulous car, fabulous color, fun to drive. Very little there not to like. The rear seat is useless, but you know that going in, right? So that's not really a valid complaint. Even a reasonably large trunk, good fuel economy, but weird problem. You want to guess the weird problem?
No.
Okay. There is, people familiar with newer cars know that ambient lighting is becoming a thing.
Yeah.
So you have these light shows in the car, and they're kind of fun, and you can change the colors sometimes. And my daughter loved this stuff when she was little. In this car, on the dashboard, there is a light array of LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
They're cool. They're subtle. They're nice. How can this be bad?
It reflects on the windshield?
It reflects in the outside mirrors. And, I could not back up any place after dark.
Interesting.
It filled the reflection off the dash, filled the rearview mirrors. So I was forced to try to back up using just the cam. And what was it? Turning my head and looking. You know, a thing I'm not that accustomed.
Heaven forbid.
Yeah. So weird thing. And I was surprised that we'd get as far as a production vehicle, that someone wouldn't have called it out, something. But it was a real problem. And it was my only problem with that car. Delightful car.
Interesting. So, but I mean, you can, in most vehicles, and I'm assuming the same is true with the BMW, you can turn ambient lighting off.
Off completely?
Yeah.
I didn't do that. I didn't try. I was just sort of surprised by it.
Yeah, because there's usually in one of the screens, you can go in and you can dim them, like, because some people are very light sensitive, so you can turn it down, and then you can turn it all the way off.
I want to just keep playing with the different colors until I find the least obtrusive one.
Yeah. I don't know. I turn all of the ambient lighting in all of my vehicles pink. I like pink.
Sorry to hear that.
I know. So if you ever get a vehicle and it has pink lighting, that's like my graffiti saying Jill was here.
So, Jill, what do you think the most profitable vehicle in the Ford lineup is?
Oh, I would think it's probably the F-150.
It is probably the Lincoln Navigator.
Oh, you're talking about Ford Motor Company, period.
Yep.
I was thinking just FOMO.
Yeah, the Expedition is probably with it. I did some checking this morning. No, nothing definitive, but most sources report that Ford makes an average of $10,000 to $12,000 per unit on Expeditions and Navigators.
Okay.
Huge amount of money.
Yeah.
Huge amount of money. Very important to the bottom line. I think it's very important to the lineup, too, because people really love these vehicles.
They do.
Now, these vehicles were last updated in 2018, but you have just driven.
Yes.
Freshened. Actually, they're calling it a new generation.
Are they? I thought
Wikipedia
they were calling
is.
New. Well, so I don't know that Lincoln is. I think they're calling it new, but not all new.
Okay.
Hmm.
But these huge,
I'll have to look.
These huge body on frame, mm-hmm. ready to tow, relatively off-road capable. Not extremely off. The wheelbase is way too long for off-roading.
Yeah.
But they're off-road capable. And surprisingly expensive vehicle.
Yeah, yeah.
Beloved by many. They're updated. Tell us.
Yeah, so I drove the Navigator first, and then I had the opportunity to drive the Expedition. And Navigator is obviously the bougier version of the two, and it gets the Nautilus treatment for the screen. So essentially that large, is it 48-inch you know, OLED, which it does, the O does stand for organic, display that goes from
A-pillar
to A-pillar.
That's a mea culpa on your part.
No, I just said I didn't know what it stood for, and you said organic, and I was like, okay.
That's not what you said.
What did I say?
You said it didn't.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you called me out on it.
No, we're going to have to go back and listen to the tape because I don't think
you go back and listen.
I don't think I said
that. I got a podcast to do.
Okay, whatever. It is the A-pillar to A-pillar screen where you have like the three modules on the right side that you can put like time, trip information, that kind of stuff. And then you have...
I have been reading a surprising amount of pushback on this and I do not see the downside of this.
No.
It's just free information.
Well,
I like it.
And it's information that doesn't change. So it's not like it's a ticker tape of like sports scores or whatever where you would be distracted and looking at it. It's a clock.
Yeah. People are talking I'm reading really weird reviews where people think they have to crane their neck. Everything is in the line of sight.
It is. And, yeah. And the thing is, I would say the people who are saying that haven't driven it. Because I got a lot of pushback on my social media saying that, you know, that it would be very distracting and you can't see over it. And I'm like, no, I'm 5 feet tall. I can see over it. I can see over it just fine. So I didn't find it distracting at all. It's static information. It's not stuff that changes. I mean, unless, a random thunderstorm comes in, then your weather might change. But or dust storm, like we had in Chicago last week.
Information.
Yeah.
And that does not extend to the Expedition.
Yes, but no.
Okay.
So it doesn't get the 48-inch screen, but it gets, I want to say it's like 27 inches. So it kind of goes halfway. And I would say I like that less. The big screen just kind of, I'm big into balance and matching and all of that. And the Expedition just looks unfinished. It works and you can get used to it. But after having driven the Navigator with the full screen, the Expedition just looks undone.
So most people aren't going to cross shop the two. Is it better than the old Expedition?
Oh, it's oodles better.
Okay.
So here's what the two vehicles share. They both have the new Ford Google built in. You know, they call it the Lincoln digital experience and the Lincoln and the Ford digital experience in the Ford. But it's Google built-in, so Google Maps, Google Assistant, that will have native voice commands that will allow you to, you know, change the temperature, change your station. I think it may even let you roll down your windows, if I heard that correctly. But so there are different natural voice commands that you can issue. And I believe the Ford Digital Experience is now coming with a 3-year trial, but they don't know what the cost will be after that. Then
it is going to be so confusing to buy a used car in a few years because you're going to have to re-up this stuff.
Well, and I know
it's going to be like buying an apartment, renting a new apartment.
Yeah, and some automakers will make the digital experience free for the first owner, and then buying it used, then you have to decide if you're going to subscribe or not.
And we're used to that, right? Because that's what Hyundai does with its great warranties.
Yes,
the 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. It's only for the first driver. It drops to something normal, like 550 for the second driver. So we're used to these things for the first owner.
Yeah. So, but the digital experience is good. I thought the voice commands were natural and good, and they worked really well. The one thing I was playing around with Apple CarPlay, I found in a part of the behind the driver gauge cluster in both the Navigator and the Expedition, on the left part of, or the rightmost part of that module, there's a map. And if you're using Google Maps, it's a Google map that filters in there. But if you're using Apple CarPlay and you use Apple Maps, your Apple map will go up there as well. So, and a lot of times that doesn't happen when automakers, they're not playing nice with Apple CarPlay, and so you don't get the full Apple map that would show up in a different location, but this gets the full Apple map up there. So that's cool. But
All right. Enough tech, though.
I know. So outside of that, let's move all the way from
trucks.
Tech.
What are they like?
There are three-row SUVs, and what I was trying to also say is the two things that Navigator and Expedition share is the split tailgate. That's the big news.
And that's a little bit like Rover does, right?
Yes.
Where the tailgate's in two pieces and one part goes down, forming essentially a ledge or even a seat.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And You can have them both come down at once. You can leave the tailgate up and have the lift gate go up.
Did they say why they did this? It always seemed like just an interesting curiosity on Rover products. I didn't know there was like public demand for this.
So they did it as more of a functional thing because they're like, you know, people who own our vehicles will probably have athletic gear in the back, which could include like baseball, softball, soccer balls, that kind of stuff. So
or
if
because
you,
these are expensive, hockey gear.
Yeah. And so like if you just put up the liftgate part and your tailgate is still in place, then your gear and your balls don't fall out on the floor. So it was kind of
hate
a functional
it when
thing.
That happens.
You hate it when your balls fall on the floor. But it was one of those things where they said it was more of a functional thing. And, you know, you have the option to how you want to configure it. And also for tailgating as well, because they said that a lot of people who would own these vehicles might want to tailgate, maybe not camp in the Navigator, but, you know, especially the Expedition, you'd probably camp. So that those two are similar. But one of the things they did to differentiate the two is on the Navigator, the tailgate portion is body colored, but on the Expedition, it's black. And so it's kind of weird to have like a white vehicle and then you have a black tailgate.
A little bit weird.
You know, I did.
Makers are struggling with what to do with that huge slab of steel in the back of big crossovers.
Yeah.
Like Chevy Tahoes and Suburbans have that ridiculous giant chrome piece above which it says the name of the vehicle in huge letters. And like, it's awkward.
Yeah.
But that would have been a huge weird space to leave blank. So
yeah. I think it looks fine on the Navigator, and it looks a little weird on the Expedition with the black. And I asked specifically, okay, why'd you do that? And they're like, we're calling attention to this fact that this is a new feature. And I'm like, so does that mean that you will have a body-colored, you know, panel available in the future? We don't talk about future product. I'm like, all right. So I think if people hate it,
I didn't realize this. I need to look at a picture.
Yeah, and so it's kind of interesting. But the third row is comfortable in both of the vehicles. You know, you have plenty of leg room. The second row, I really only tested vehicles with captain's chairs, and so roomy and comfortable as well. And we were mostly looking at upper trims, and so you've got like climate controls and heated seats and things like that. With the Expedition, they do have a new Tremor trim, which is an off-road, you know, looking and capable, extra ground clearance,
and
more
skid
plates.
It's looking like Tremor is now the brand.
Yeah.
Because what was it that Ford played with for a minute? Was it Woodland, Ridge? I can't remember.
No.
Timberline. Yeah.
I
Ford
was like,
played
no,
that
no,
on
yes.
the Expedition. A vehicle I really liked, and I like the application of the off-road stuff there, but they backed away from that, and now they're going to go Tremor.
Yeah, Tremor
so
is
that's the
thing.
New brand.
So it has like orange accents, more skid plates, front tow hooks or recovery hooks. It has, you know, the extra cladding underneath for, you know, just protection. It has good, you know, off-road, and then I think rock crawl trail modes. And then, you know,
here's the thing. Like, if you drive that car around and you actually make use of a skid plate, you've made a mistake.
Nah, I disagree. We made use of the skid plate in the Tremor.
Yeah, off-road.
Off-road.
At a path that someone picked for you.
Yes.
99% of people will never actually take advantage of the skid plate.
I mean, if people who buy this vehicle are going camping, they will take advantage. They will use the skid plate.
Okay, I used to go camping a lot. I never went to a campground that involved me engaging four-wheel drive.
Well, I'm sorry for you then. You didn't get a very good campsite.
True story. I worked for a couple at a marketing consultancy company. It was a little boutique shop, just this couple owned it. And they made a big deal of the fact that they drove a Jeep Cherokee. They were just all about their Jeep Cherokee. They were Jeep types of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew I was a car guy. And one day it was snowing like heck. And they called me at the base of their driveway. They were like, how do you engage four-wheel drive? I'm like, see, I knew they were frauds.
Yeah,
it was more complicated in the old Cherokee. This is the old rear-wheel drive Cherokee.
Okay.
Beloved vehicle. But
yeah. But this car did well off-road, did well on-road. It was really quiet, both versions. The other big sticking point I think people are going to find, and both the Navigator and the Expedition put the foot pedal adjustments and your steering wheel adjustments through like a thumb wheel on your steering wheel.
Yeah.
And it's not completely awful, but it's just, it'll take some getting used to.
Do the pedal adjustments, are they part of the adjustable seat, the memory presets?
Yes, I believe they are.
So it doesn't matter that much because you're going to use it once.
Well, unless you're a girl and you wear high heels, low heels.
Oh, that's on you.
Yeah, because I have to adjust my pedals depending.
Okay, we're running out of time here. But real quick, I just want to confirm something. There are far fewer trim lines now for the Expedition for 2025.
Yes.
And the base price has come up.
Yes.
But the new trim level at the bottom is called Active.
Yes.
And it's kind of more inclusive, right? It's a better, it's not a base trim level.
Yeah, I would say that's true. And Active is the new, I want to say, base trim line for most of the SUVs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And basically, this is Ford raising prices.
Yeah,
sort of,
because, like $7,000.
Right, because there aren't base trim levels anymore.
No.
And I think if we go into the tariff situation like we are, that's the way a lot of manufacturers are going to play it. The bottom end is going to be brought up, mm-hmm. and cars are essentially coming more expensive. Now, if you would shop for a middle or top trim level, this doesn't affect you, really.
Right.
That's the car you would have bought anyway, and the price isn't going up for you. But people are being excluded now.
Yeah.
All right. So just quickly sum up, good stuff?
Yes, good stuff.
Good stuff. All right. And these new vehicles go on sale?
I believe they are already on sale.
Okay.
So it was funny. I got back from the Ford Expedition program, landed at O'Hare, and the very first car I saw at O'Hare was a Ford Expedition.
Oh, really?
The new model.
What are the odds? All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Dan Pass of Pass Consulting.
Yes.
Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. Thank you for joining us today. Jill, throw me a bone real quick.
Hey, Tom, are you on social media?
Jill, I happen to be on social media. Thank you so much for asking.
You're so welcome.
I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky. Blue Sky kind of coming alive after a dull spot.
Okay.
More people there that I used to know from Twitter, good conversations. And I'm now doing the Adam 12 thing exclusively on Blue Sky, where when our friends Reed and I forgot the other guy's name. What's that? Reed and Malloy, when they drive past some weird car, I will pause the screen, take a picture, and post it on Blue Sky, and people have to guess what the vehicle is.
Didn't you have was it a Corvette?
Was it a Porsche 914?
I thought it was a Corvette.
It's crazy because all the cars in California, apparently in the early 70s, were Porsche 914s. Okay. I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like one of the early Stingrays.
Oh, well, sure. So like a 60, what'd the Stingray kick in? 68, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Good conversation coming up today. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Our guest today is a colleague and friend with a rich resume. He spent years working in communications with the likes of traditional car makers like Nissan and headed communications and marketing for alternative fuel startup Nikola.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show, Dan Pass. Dan, how are you?
Hello, my friends. I was just checking Blue Sky. I have to hold on for a second.
Make sure you follow both of us. We have a competition, and I think
course,
I'm losing.
Of course.
Oh, you're losing big time.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Are you on Blue Sky?
I am. I don't remember what my address. I think it's just my name. I should probably get back on it.
A lot of people did that, like during the Twitter X kerfuffle. They're just like, I'm going to Blue Sky, and they mark their territory, but they haven't been hanging around there.
Yeah.
Hopefully. No, I think I still have a MySpace page somewhere. Every time that there's a new social media app or something out, I end up making an account just to have it, and then I forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Jill has a Jill in Glovebox account on Blue Sky.
Wow.
Yeah.
throwing it back there. I like it.
Jill on the dash, Jill in the trunk, Jill, yeah.
Yeah, Jill in a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
That's a funny thing because no one knows what a phone booth is.
That would be true. It's a changing box.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. It's great to talk to you guys. It's been too long.
It has been. Dan, tell us about Pass Consulting.
Well, thank you so much. I think it's known at least throughout our list, these listeners, about the Nikola Corporation, unfortunately, went under. Was a great product, but, you know, could be a little too early, for the level of technology that it offered. But I was thrilled to see that Lucid came on and not only took over the headquarters here in Phoenix and also the factory, but then also took on 300 employees.
That's awesome.
So it's Yeah, it's really great. So I know a lot of exciting excited folks that are there now, and I'm thrilled for them. They're a great Arizona company, Lucid. But as for me, I put out my own shingle. This is the fourth time I've done this, but I'm very excited that I've gotten so many interesting clients. For example, Fuel Fest. My biggest client right now is Fuel Fest. If you need to check it out, fuelfest.com. It is literally a festival of art, of music, cars, drifting, you name it. And
wow.
It's run by Cody Walker, who is Paul's brother, and it raises money for Reach Out Worldwide.
Okay.
And there are eight shows around the country. So the next one is in the Bay Area on May 31st, and then we'll be going to L.A. and then sprinkled throughout the country. It's an amazing show. It's only one day. It's a Saturday only, usually from about 1 to 8 or 2 to 9. And it's truly interactive. You walk around. It's too much fun. So I'm working with them in order to try to keep building it and bring in, you know, more and different folks to be a part of it. So very excited to say that in Pomona, which is coming up at the end of June, we'll be having NHRA drag racing.
Oh, cool.
So and that's actually Run What You Brung. So if some people want to start the race wars come to life, right? So it's truly an amazing experience. And when you go there, you remember why you got involved in this business in the first place. I just love the enthusiasm, the excitement. Usually about 10 to 20,000 people and, you know, 500 to 1,000 cars there, not including the drifters and whatnot. And it's just, it's too much fun. I really just enjoy it. It's raw.
And it's called Fuel Fest.
Fuel Fest.
And what are the cities it's going to hit this summer?
So it's already been through Tampa and West Palm and Atlanta. It's going to be in the Bay Area coming up. It's Pomona. Then it'll be in Salt Lake City, Dallas, and then Phoenix. And then they do have a stop in Japan at Fuji Speedway.
Oh, cool. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It is great. Please, you can see it on all the socials, especially TikTok. Fuel Fest, you can look up also Cody Walker. His Instagram is pretty big, and it'll bring you right to us, and that has been amazing. I've also been working with the LA Auto Show to try to make it even bigger, especially for automobility, to bring together some panels, some news, and hopefully some podcasters to come on out for the day and really spend the time, you know, delving into all the different technologies and whatnot. We've had great conversations about making it really sort of a focal point versus, you know, press days aren't what they used to be. And
right.
I'm maybe talking a little inside baseball, but press days aren't what they used to be. And really what we're looking to do is create a full day for content creators, for traditional media, for podcasts, for whoever is able in the industry to come on out and really get that interactive experience.
No, I don't trust podcasters. Do you want real journalists?
I don't trust them at all.
They're hinky.
I only trust a few. And there's a couple other clients I have working right now, but I'm excited to announce one actually today. I haven't put it up on social media yet. I'm going to be, I am, working with Steve Saleen.
Oh, excellent.
So Steve is still doing his thing after 40-plus years.
Wow.
Still out of California, building 700-horsepower Mustangs and whatnot. And I've come on board to assist him in spreading the gospel, getting some cars out there, getting some press cars out there, and having some fun with him.
Now, for people who don't know, just tell us a little bit about what Saleen is, right? Because I'm most familiar with, like, late model Saleen modified Mustangs, but there is a street legal Saleen car, right? And like from the bottom up, available right now, right?
Right. So basically, what Saleen does is they take it's a combination of a few things. Number one is they take existing vehicles from Ford, generally speaking, Mustangs and F-150s, and now Broncos. And they literally tear them down and rebuild them inside, outside, extra bracing, and usually with a lot more power.
Yeah.
For example, you know, the Saleen Mustangs have over 800 horsepower. So you can get them with over 800 horsepower. You know, typically, same thing with the trucks. And then he built, 25 years ago was actually the first one, was the Saleen S7.
I remember it.
Bespoke supercar. There's about 100, I believe, that are out there right now. It is actually the winningest, one of the winningest sports cars of all time, because it pretty much took to the track and dominated. This is actually the 25th year of existing, and he's actually still building a couple of them. There's still people that want them.
Did that car?
And he updates them. So it started off with 550 horsepower, which was unheard of back in the day. Then he twin turbocharged it for like 700 horsepower, and now you can do 12 to 1500 horsepower.
Wasn't there some charming legacy to that? Didn't they use like an old Ford 7.3 liter block? I know it was heavily updated.
It was a 7 liter, yeah.
7 liter, also like 427.
Yeah, it started off like that. Yeah,
okay.
427. Yeah.
Okay, that is so cool.
And he's still building. You can see him the shop right off the 91 freeway in Corona, California. He's
oh wow!
Still doing it, and yeah, and it's been very exciting to spend some time with him. He also built the original Ford GTs. So not the original ones, but the ones from the mid-2000s were actually built by Celine.
Actually, funny story, Jill and I were at the Romeo Proving Grounds, and we drove that vehicle back-to-back. The funny thing about driving that thing, I think we were limited to 130 or 140. It's a high bank oval.
Right.
There's no sense of speed. So you're going 140 and you're yawning.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this car is fast, but there's no sense of, like, you needed pedestrians running across the track. But there was none of that. It was way too easy. But, yeah, we drove that car.
It's funny that you talk about that, because it reminds me of when I used to work for Nissan, and I did that for decades, and of course I know you from there, is I would borrow GTRs for the weekend, and I would get on the highway and just try to keep up with traffic, not looking at the speedometer. You'd look down, you'd be doing 115 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It has to happen to you guys all the time with all the different cars that you get into.
I'm a child of the 80s. Getting to 100 miles an hour was like something we dreamed of in the 80s. Nothing did it. The Malaysia
Rose. I'm with you. My first car was an 81 Pontiac, followed by an 85 Subaru, followed by an 82 Scirocco. So I understand.
I was a Scirocco man and loved that car. But mid-80s Subarus were about the slowest things I ever spent time in.
Mm. Oh, yes. No, I had one for years.
We used to refer to the gas pedal as an on-off switch.
Oh, yeah. You just have to build up one heck of a head of steam to get up a hill.
Yeah. Well, you've got a lot going on, Dan, and I'm glad to hear it. I hope you don't mind if I ask you something real quick, though, about the industry in general.
Of course.
Now, you moved from Nissan, a very traditional legacy kind of company, and then you went to go work at Nikola, which is entirely the other thing. Talk to me about how different startups feel from traditional legacy brands, and is there anything inherently good or bad about the way they do business moving forward?
Wow, that's a big question.
I know, I'm like, that's a good question.
It's a great question. And I will say this. I loved being at Nissan. I still am a Nissan driver.
Uh-huh.
I have three of them at home. I have a Z, an Armada, and a Kicks. My daughter has a Kicks. And I drive my Z every day. So I'm a huge fan. Going to a startup like Nikola, it was terribly exciting. You feel like you're in, you feel like you're being given an opportunity to really make change, especially with something like Nikola, which was zero emissions, big rigs.
Right.
You know, and when you go there and you spend time with the people that are there, everybody that's there wants to be there.
Okay, interesting.
That's a big difference. Many times when you work in a larger company or larger organization, people are there because, you know, they're working to live. Mm-hmm. In this particular case, you're there as part of this passionate group that wants to really make a difference. You're living to work. And you're living also because it's truly mission-oriented, especially with something like a Nikola. So it's a completely different mindset that you walk in there with. Also, let's just say, you know, again, when you're part of a large organization, you are sort of not boxed in, but your roles are fairly defined.
Okay.
In many cases, in a startup environment, it's whatever is needed.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I would do, my day could consist of waking up in the morning to an emergency because a battery is on fire on trucks, which did happen.
Okay.
To that's
sounds
the way
bad.
The day would start. Yeah, the battery fires that we had for a bit. I became very good friends with the public information officer at the Phoenix Fire Department. but that would be my morning, followed by in the afternoon, I would be helping the CEO put together investor relations decks followed by, you know, helping the social media team create a video that would then go out about the truck's capabilities. I mean, that was just one day.
That's like a week for most people.
it was, and that was thrilling. I mean, for somebody like myself, who, you know, I'm a self-described certainly intense sort. I loved it. I loved the fast pace. I loved the intensity. I loved, you know, the risk involved. But then again, there is that risk involved. I am not there anymore because the company is not there anymore. Nissan still around.
That's true. And speaking of Nissan. Speaking of Nissan and Nissan being around, what do you make of Nissan's current troubles, the reduced market share, the reduced volume? Is this temporary? Is this cultural?
I think it's temporary. I actually personally do know the new CEO when I was over in Japan. I was the global head of product communications, and I worked with Yvonne constantly. He is the real deal. He is a true a dyed-in-the-wool car guy. He knows what needs to be done. He's a true Nissan fanatic as well. And I couldn't imagine a better person being in charge globally, because he's got no ego to him. You spend time with him, and we used to spend time, you know, socially together. He's a wonderful guy, a truly wonderful guy, a true great car guy. And I do believe that the issues that they are having right now are temporary.
Okay.
And I also think that the entire country, you know, and the whole world is going through changes.
It's a weird time.
It really, truly is. I mean, especially speaking to somebody who's in business for themselves, it can be bumpy. You know, there's lots of folks that I've spoken to in the industry. I've almost landed a few clients, but, you know, due to a political situation or a market situation, you know, it just didn't come through.
Yeah, it's weird. I look at Nissan now, and I don't think the problem is product, right? The Altima may not be the best product in its class, but the rest of the products are very good.
Yeah.
I think the product mix might skew a little bit towards more affordable stuff, which can hurt profitability. But ultimately, I think, you know, the other argument is that they don't have enough hybrids. Well, General Motors doesn't have any hybrids, and General Motors is doing pretty good right now.
Right.
So I think there's a cultural issue, there's a distribution issue, and maybe just a marketing issue, but... Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a rebound coming, but it's good to hear that.
Yeah, there are very, very talented people that are there. A lot of my friends are certainly still there, and I know many of the people here and overseas in Japan and in Europe and throughout, very talented folks. You know, I think it's just the cycle issue, and it'll cycle right back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm still very passionate about the brand. Yesterday, I went to a big Nissan car meet. I'm part of the Z Club out here.
Oh, fun.
Went to the Nissan car meet down at Bartlett Lake out here in Phoenix. And it's just fun. The enthusiasm is still great. And that's the one thing that I do love about this business is truly the enthusiasm.
Well, that's cool.
You know, I love being a part of the clubs. I love learning about it. Even the truck folks that I learned, big rig enthusiasts, it was amazing just to spend time with them. And just the passion that you know, everybody could, any of these people, any of our friends that we know can go get a job. But, you know, it truly takes the passionate and dedicated to really excel.
Well, that's cool. Dan, we have flat run out of time. Remind us about past consulting.
Yeah, so if you need help and you're in the business, please check me out at passconsulting.com. And if you are around, please do check out Fuel Fest as well as Celine.
Sounds good. We will link to those things.
You can find them both online, and we would love, love, love to see you at a Fuel Fest and certainly in a Celine vehicle. And thank you guys so much. It's been so great to spend time with you.
Dan, good talking to you. Good luck.
Take care.
All right. That was Dan Pass with Pass Consulting. We're going to take a break, and when we come back...
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of the Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit greensenseshow.com or listen to the Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. And I said Celine by accident.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. The car that Jill and I drove back-to-back at the Romeo Proving Grounds at Ford's invitation was the GT.
Yes.
And I can't remember the model year, but yeah. Going way back.
Well, and it was really funny because they don't have, the seats don't adjust very well. They literally had to, like, I had to sit on coats. And because
phone
I
books.
Could,
don't you bring phone books with
I
you?
I do not bring phone books, but I wish they had had one because I literally had to like jerry rig the seat and like sit on coats to be able to like see over the dash and be able to reach the pedals.
Do you know that the term jerry rigged is slightly racist?
I did not.
No, I use it all the time too. But jerry actually was a term in place of German. It had something to do with Germans in World War II. I don't know. I haven't looked it up in a while. I'm also not going to worry about it.
No.
Of the terms I use by accident, that's the least offensive. but you're in social media, speaking of offensive.
Thanks. Thanks for that. Yes, I am. You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Blue Sky, Threads, X. I am on X Twitter, at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag CarDuJour. If there's a social medium out there that I am not on, I would love to know what that is.
All right, then.
Yeah.
You're done?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
I had my headphones off.
I can see that. You're falling asleep there for a moment.
I am under-caffeinated today.
I'm feeling a little under-caffeinated myself.
I was up late. I was running that BMW M235 review.
Got it.
So. Mm. But it was good. I enjoyed riding that one.
Okay.
I mentioned Dr. Carl Jung.
Okay. Because everybody wants to read about Jung in car reviews.
Anyway,
okay.
I did though. I did. I think I did it well.
Oh, okay.
It was like a well-incorporated weird reference.
Okay.
It's quiz time.
Okay.
Today's topic, are you ready?
I'm never ready.
25 mpg highway.
Ugh.
That's
okay.
Our topic. I'm going to give you a car. You have to tell me if it hits 25 mpg on the highway.
Okay.
It's that easy.
That's not easy.
And we're a little bit late. That's my fault.
Okay. What I'm hearing you say is I'm not allowed to stall.
Not much.
Okay.
Ready? I'm going to give you five cars.
Okay.
All right. Five questions plus a bonus question. Six total. You have to get three for a win.
Okay.
And last week you beat Zach.
I did.
Yeah.
Only with the bonus question.
Both of you guys cleaned up and then you got the bonus question. All right. By the way, we're back to fast food restaurants today.
Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. The base Corvette. Does the base Corvette, 6.2 liter automatic, hit 25 mpg on the highway?
It's been a hot minute since I've driven a Corvette.
By the way, it's a version of this engine is the one that's responsible for the massive GM recall in the Escalade and other large GM vehicles.
But I seem to recall when I had to take a road trip in a Corvette like a solid 10 or 15 years ago, and I was impressed that it got 30 miles per gallon.
Corvettes have always impressed with highway mileage.
Yeah, so I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, 25 right now. That's the EPA number.
Okay.
But there were stories, especially going back to when it was a 5.7 liter engine,
mm-hmm.
Of those things hitting 30 on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. They're very aerodynamic. Mm-hmm. They're not especially heavy. All right, so you've got one.
Okay.
The Land Rover Defender 110, this one with the 2-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder engine. Does it break 25 on the highway? Going to need an answer.
You always need an answer.
Well, is just because of the dead air? Not entertaining.
There's music in the background. It's not
That's
dead
true.
Air.
That's true. It helps. It helps.
Come on. There's no dead air.
Yeah.
I could change
I just downloaded the song. I listened to it in the car.
Of course you do. Mm. I could believe that, actually. Because, you know, your music. I'm going to say no.
No. Yeah, surprisingly thirsty. 1820. City Highway 20. So the Defender with the 4-cylinder engine 20, the Corvette with the V8 engine 25.
Okay.
Just saying. You have 2 points.
Woo!
Writing that down. Two. All right. The Buick Enclave front wheel drive. Buick just redesigned. It's a large crossover. That's what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 liter turbocharged engine. That's all you can get. The only thing you can choose is a front wheel drive or all wheel drive. But we're talking front.
I'm going to say yes.
27, which seems pretty good. Here's the thing, and I don't know what the deal is. With all-wheel drive, it drops 3 mpg to 24.
Hmm.
So you've already won. Nice job. All right, here's one. Ready? Maserati Grecale Trofeo. Say that several times fast.
No.
Also, I didn't realize there was a Trofeo version of this vehicle because the Grecale relatively new. That's a compact crossover. And it absolutely got to be their volume model.
Yeah, I haven't driven it yet.
I haven't either.
I wonder if there's one in the fleet.
Hello, Stellantis.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to bend Kelly's ear this week.
This is one of those brands we should worry about disappearing from the U.S.
Maserati, mm-hmm. Yeah. Along with Fiat.
And Alfa.
Yeah. I'm going to say no.
It does, just barely. 1825.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a 3-liter turbocharged engine.
Okay.
The others have a 2-liter turbo. You've got 4. You're on your way to a perfect game here. This one's interesting because I kind of didn't realize they were still making
Wait,
this.
Wait, no, I missed that one, though. I said no.
You said no?
Yeah.
Oh. Womp, womp, womp.
I'm like...
This is me crossing out your point.
Thanks.
All right. Sorry for you.
Do I have to correct you again on something?
You've already won. It's not that important, though. It's not like I'm putting a dollar in your 401k for every one of these you get right.
That is true. Yeah. Would you?
No. I could. I mean, it's not that much money.
That's true. I'll take it, though.
And over time.
It would build.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. I forgot they still built this, but they do. The Ram 1500 HFE.
Mm-hmm.
High fuel economy. Which does still come with a 3.6-liter V6 and e-torque mild hybrid system.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why this is funny in a moment.
Okay. I'm going to say no.
Yes.
Huh.
26 mpg, but here's the deal. I think this is kind of more a price special than an efficiency special because the standard horsepower version of the Hurricane 6, the 3-liter, basically matches the fuel economy of this.
Okay.
So not a lot of advantage for going with this, and you're going to get less power.
Yeah.
So this may not be around much longer. And e-torque, of course, was their belt-driven mild hybrid system.
Yeah.
That did not set the world on fire.
No, it did not.
All right. Are you ready for the bonus question? So you've got 4.
Oh, 3.
3. Wait.
I missed the last 2.
You said no in the last one?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not really paying attention today.
Clearly. I've already won, so you're not
paying
attention.
Are we recording? Are
we on air? We are. Right.
Yeah,
we are.
Wake me up
when
the show starts.
And there will be video.
Wake me up when the show starts.
Uh-huh.
All right. Jill, McDonald's. You've heard of it.
No. What is McDonald's?
It's a popular restaurant.
Okay. A restaurant.
Restaurant chain.
Okay.
How many stores do you think they have in the UK?
In the UK?
Yeah. The Uck, as the kids call it.
The Uck. Do you remember Officer Uck?
No.
Okay. Like they put the stickers on poison. I think it was Officer
Uck. Oh, yeah. Wasn't it Yuck?
Maybe it was Yuck.
Yeah.
I don't know. 100.
1,500.
Okay.
You're in the ballpark.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Okay.
Jill, which of the following is not on the UK McDonald's menu? Are you ready? I didn't know that they had such interesting and weird stuff there. Like way cooler than the U.S.
Well, I mean, the UK is way cooler than the U.S., so stands to reason.
Is it?
I lived there for a year. I wished I didn't come back.
All right.
Yeah.
I need you to tell me which of the following. We have 4 minutes here.
Okay.
Cheesy garlic bread dippers.
Oh, yum.
Veggie dippers.
Yum.
Porridge.
No.
And spicy garlic potato nuggets.
Also yum. But I would guess the porridge is probably on there. Because that is a very British thing.
Is it?
Sticks to your ribs.
Porridge.
It's like oatmeal. Okay, so what was the first one?
Cheesy garlic bread dippers.
What was the second one?
Veggie dippers.
And then the third one, or fourth one?
Spicy garlic potato nuggets.
I'm going to say the garlic bread, the first one.
Is the fake?
Yeah.
No, that's real, and the picture looked really good.
Okay.
The veggie dippers, too, are interesting, and they looked so interesting I had to find out what they were. Are you ready?
Okay.
They're a tasty blend of red peppers and sun-dried tomato paste, all coated in crispy golden breadcrumbs and vegan certified by the Vegetarian Society. I want those.
Yeah, they look good.
The porridge is real, of course, and the spicy garlic potato nuggets are fake.
Okay.
And I just realized I usually tip my hand by calling something spicy just to add 2 syllables.
Okay.
All right. there we go. You are out next week. I'll be flying solo.
Yes.
You'll be at the Midwest Automotive Media Association Spring Rally.
Yes.
You wanted to talk about something at Pickup Truck Plus SUV
Talk.
Yeah,
good news, big news, Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. So pickuptrucktalk.com. We are now syndicated on MSN.
That's very nice.
So when I said that I was syndicated, like, I'm really syndicated.
Although not part of being a freelancer.
No.
So to keep the message clean, you would not say that you were syndicated when you were freelancing.
Well, I'm a freelancer and syndicated journalist. How's that?
We need to streamline your...
I have so many things.
I'm just like a guy.
I'm a podcast host. I'm a YouTube personality. I've got a TikTok channel. I'm a creator. I got stuff, man.
All I have
Go
is,
find me. I got
all,
stuff.
All I have is the respect of my peers.
Do you? Do you?
Not based on several emails I received recently, no.
Well, you know.
There's something else here I wanted to talk about real quick. I don't know if I can get it in real quick.
You can get it in.
What was it?
If you can find it.
No, I don't have it. Not that big a deal. You know what I did want to talk about real quick?
Huh.
In the one more minute? So we're talking about big SUVs.
Yes.
And Ford's big SUVs. So here's the deal. In that class, I don't know how many Yukon Denalis they sell because mm-hmm. General Motors doesn't break out Denali and Yukon Denali. But Yukon Denali definitely in the luxury class.
Mm-hmm.
The Lexus LX,
mm-hmm.
last year about 9,000 units. The Pathfinder, not the Pathfinder, I'm sorry, but the Infiniti QX80,
mm-hmm.
about 10,000 units. This surprised me because I didn't think they'd made this much ground. The Jeep Grand Wagoneer, about 12,000 units.
Mm.
The Navigator, about 15,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
Take a guess on the Escalade.
I'm going to say like 50,000.
42,000.
Hmm.
It almost outsells all the others combined.
Well, it has such brand recognition.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
And it used to be a product of hip-hop culture. That's what mm-hmm. it was early on.
Okay.
Here's another funny thing. I actually thought the Escalade predated the Navigator in the marketplace, but the Navigator actually came first.
Yeah, I feel like the Escalade was the response to the Navigator.
I didn't remember it that way.
Yeah.
And then it was really half-assed, too. It was really just Chevy Tahoe
like
with crap glued to it.
Yeah.
It was...
Yeah, yeah. I did...
it was offensively cheap.
A buying guide for car gurus about the Escalade, and I seem to recall that fact.
Yeah. All right, guess what we did?
We had a great show.
We did. A lot of fun. Good talking to Dan Pass. Love to have Dan back. Dan, if you're listening, we appreciate you joining us. Thank you, Jill.
Yep.
Thank you, producer Randy. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.